Welcome to the Split Screen Podcast. This is the official podcast of BlankPageBeatdown.com. My name is Shah Shahid, and this podcast is all about comparing film remakes to their source material to expose similarities, differences, and provide insight to put it all into context. This episode, we'll be comparing two films that aren't exactly direct remakes, but they were produced, written, directed, and star more or less the same group of people. And the two movies are Humpty Sharma Ki Dulhania and Badrinath Ki Dulhania, known as, from here on out, the Dulhania franchise. And both the movies star Varun Dhawan and Alia Bhatt, and are both written and directed by director Shashank Khaitan. This is where things get special, okay? We've got an awesome treat for everyone listening. It is a return of one of the special guests of Space Cream Podcast. Now, don't call it a comeback, because she's been here for years, rocking her peers. Let me introduce to you Miss Kathy Gibson from AccessBollywood.com. Kathy, welcome back.
Hey, I'm back. Woo!
Applause, applause.
This is, wow, I'm never going to get such a good introduction like that again in my life. I gotta live it up. I'm here. Let's go, people.
This is how you want to be introduced anywhere you go. You send a text beforehand. You're like, I want you to say these words when I walk in the door.
I should do that.
Why not? Why not? Have you seen that episode of, have you ever seen The Office?
I've seen bits and pieces of it. Okay. We're talking the American one or the British one?
The American one.
Yeah. Okay, I haven't seen
it. So there's an episode where this guy tricks this other guy into throwing like a high-class garden tea party. He actually fake writes a book for him to read to find out the etiquette of doing so. And the best part is every guest has to be announced when they come in through the door, through the archway. The louder the announcement, the more importance and significance of the person walking in. So the thing he did was the guy who played the prank, he would come in, he'd be announced, and he'd be like, oh, I forgot my keys, I'm sorry. Goes back out, comes back in, and goes, oh, they're right here on me the whole time. And he gets announced again, and he did this for, like, a long time. You should do that.
That would be great, too. As long as the attention is on me, I'm happy.
Isn't that all that matters, really?
That's right.
all right, everyone. So, Kathy, what have you been up to? You've been missing for, I mean, mostly for me, because of me, you know, as a kind of shortcoming on my part. I don't know if you've listened, but I've just been rambling on my own the last couple of months. Because I figured I could do it on my own, and then I'm like, I can't, this is hard. So now you're back. So
I've just been crying, waiting for your phone call.
Nice.
Hiding out, watching sad movies.
Why won't he call?
Why won't he call? I've been waiting. No, we've just been waiting. We've needed something really good to come back together for, and I think this is I think this is a good reunion special.
I want people to understand, when she says good, she's talking about the reunion and not the movies we'll be discussing. Well, one of the movies we'll be discussing.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's good conversation, not the content of the conversation. Yes. We're going to be talking about, like I said, Humpty Sharma Ki Dulhania and Badrinath Ki Dulhania. Now, the reason why we're covering it on this episode, on this show, is technically they're not remakes. They're not, one isn't a remake of the exact same story of the other like we usually do. But they're remakes in the sense that the filmmakers who made the original, Humpty Sharma Ki Dulhania, decided that we're going to capitalize on the success of that movie by basically just, you know, hiring back everyone for a second movie with a totally different story, similar story, but something goes terribly, terribly wrong. They can be considered, I guess, a thematic reboot. Now,
it's very similar to like the Houseful franchise, which is, you know, three guys fall in love with three girls, yeah, and they have to convince her dad, played by Boman Irani, who has the same name in each movie, but isn't the same character because he has different daughters in every movie. But yeah, it's that same kind of thing. It's kind of cynical. I think it's very trendy now in India, but it's kind of like if you had like Sleepless in Seattle with Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, and then when they wanted to do another one, instead of calling it You've Got Mail, they were like Sleepless in New York or whatever, you know, like, or Sleepless versus the Volcano.
That's a very good connection. Yeah, I didn't think about that.
Thank you. That was this morning, yeah. I went for a walk.
I wrote that this morning, copyright.
Woo! I'm energized.
Yeah, no, that's yeah, that's exactly what it is. You're 100% right. So now, before we get into the details of both the movies themselves, I want to give everyone a fair spoiler warning. But this episode will usually we do a spoiler at the end, but unfortunately, because of the nuances of both these movies, we're going to get into full on spoiler discussion for both the movies right from the get go. We will be discussing the plot points, the specific scenes, and even climaxes for both Humpty Shamak Ki Dulhania and Badrinath Ki Dulhania. So be fair warned. Although I think Kathy, you'll agree with me, I don't think we care about anyone having to watch the most recently released one. If you've seen Humpty Shamak Ki Dulhania, you're good to listen to this podcast, I think.
Yeah, exactly. You've had 3 years to watch Humpty Sharma, and then you can just skip Badrinath. It's
hopefully
fine.
Hopefully never watch Badrinath.
Right.
So, all right, so Kathy, why don't we start off, and let's talk about Humpty Sharma Ki Dulhania. So why don't you take us through the movie? We'll go from kind of what happens in the movie, we'll recap the movie itself, and kind of discuss as we go why this movie was, you know, in our minds, pretty good.
Yeah. So like the loose premise of both films and why these are a franchise is that you've got a kind of good-for-nothing guy, played by Varun Dhawan, who falls in love with a girl played by Ali Abad, who ultimately turns him around and turns him into a good guy. And in order to do that, they have to convince one of their dads to overcome his objections to the marriage. So that's basically the setup for both movies, and which just a thousand other Hindi movies have done this the exact same setup. So what makes Humpty really good is that in Humpty Sharma, the first movie, Varun plays this guy who's a good for nothing, but it's not because he's totally aimless. It's that his life is set. He's going to take over the campus bookstore from his dad. He's having fun, scoring with the chicks on campus, and he's just kind of biding his time, you know. And then into his life comes this young woman from out of town, who catches him in the act of trying to extort a good grade from her uncle, who is a professor at his school. And rather than being mad and chastising him, she says, "Why don't you just pay me and I'll help you out? Because uncle's going to get drunk and I'll just fix your grade for you." And so in that he sees, oh my gosh, this girl is not only is she beautiful, she's also crafty and sort of morally flexible.
Yeah, just as manipulative and kind of good for nothing as me.
Exactly. And over the course, he gets to know her a little bit. It's sort of in a friendly way because one of his buddies finds out that she's engaged to some guy from America.
Yeah, we get a bit of her. Yeah. Like, she comes to the city from a small village to kind of, I guess, earn money to buy a designer wedding gown because her marriage is happening arranged. She has no choice in the matter. But her only outlet is, you know what, if I can't choose my groom, I'm going to choose my dress, which is why he's, I guess, you know, selling her intellectual services to help him cheat in that effort, basically, to get more money.
Right. And I will pause to note that what's really fun about this movie, too, is that Kaitan, the director, makes a lot of references to Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge in it, in that, you know, it's about a young girl with an arranged marriage who goes off on her first adventure by herself and meets some guy who she falls in love with. And then how do you resolve that? And it's, we even see Humpty in the very beginning. We know he's very emotional. Varun's eyes are like red the whole movie because he cries at the drop of a hat. And so he's in the theater crying and watching
like
Bedeild. Yeah, exactly. Very much like you.
Thanks for agreeing so easily.
Oh, sorry.
There's no protest. No, Shy, it's okay.
No. I mean, sir, you're very hard and stoic and
macho.
Yeah. So they get to know each other, and he finds out that she's she's got a really strong sense of justice. Her name is Kavya, by the way. And so this makes him fall in love with her even more than he already has. It's not just about that she's beautiful and all that. It's that she's really cool, and she kind of makes him be a better person, and he recognizes that.
And this is kind of like the adventure, too, that they go on, right? Like, essentially, there's this whole subplot about how, you know, someone screws over her best friend and they have to kind of get revenge on him. And so the three, him, Varun, his friend, and Kavya go on this trip to kind of, again, exact justice through this convoluted plot and, you know, blackmailing, and there's like a sex video involved. And so there's this whole thing. But again, at the end of the day, it's still very, it's funny without being like life ruining or like vulgar or like terrible or outwardly evil.
Exactly. And there's this really cool theme throughout that she really doesn't like when women get screwed over.
Right.
She protects her friend, even in the course of this blackmail scheme that
Yeah, the
they
ending is really
create.
nice.
You know, she's like, she doesn't like, it's not the woman's fault and that's not her target. And
Yeah.
so and it winds up being sort of this contest between the two of them, who's going to be nicer to the other.
Yes.
You know,
Yeah.
he gets this money. He's like, Varun and his two friends, I'm just going to refer to him by his name, by the actor's name.
Yeah.
Sorry, I should say Humpty and his two friends, you know, pool their money. They give it to him. And they're like, you've really earned it for your dress. And then she
Right.
winds up giving it back to him in the form of a car that his dad had been saving for. It's
Yeah.
this, everybody's really, really nice to each other, which is
And
so cool.
it's like a one-upmanship, right? Of like nice gestures towards one another. And that kind of really that's kind of what I guess for the audience showcases their love story, that they both came into the dynamic with goals of their own, ambitions of their own, but then throughout the, course of their relationship, their platonic relationship up to this time, it was just like an act of kindness, like sacrifice after sacrifice, but not like overtly like, I love you, I'll kill for you. Like it's very like subtle, right?
And that then takes us into the second half of the movie, because we get to a point where they realize that they're in love with each other,
Yeah.
and they have a kind of a fling before she has to go back home to her wedding. And it's after she's gone that Humpty realizes that he really can't live without Kavya, and everybody, his dad, who's super sympathetic and funny, and his two buddies all
Yeah.
realize, like, he's going to be miserable and she's going to be miserable too. So let's all head up to Umballa and convince her dad to call off this wedding to his friend, his childhood friend's son.
Right.
And so they do that, and they go up there, and her dad is a really interesting character in the sense that he's very protective. You know, he wants her to go through this with this arranged marriage because she has an older sister who had
Love
fallen in love with a
marriage.
guy, a love marriage, fallen in love with a guy. And it didn't work out because he started beating her up. And so what happens? She comes home. Dad is harboring this resentment
But at the
and this
same time,
anger.
kind of sets her up with like her own business. So at least
Yeah.
she's take, at least she's quote unquote taken care of
Yeah,
financially,
exactly.
whatever.
He sets up a business for her, because part of it is, it's not even so much that he's upset with her for having picked the wrong guy and all that. It's that he feels like he let her down. Like, I should have just decided who
Yeah.
you were going to marry. Then there wouldn't have been a problem. You would have been totally happy, and you never would have gotten into this situation. And it's my fault that I didn't control this, which is why he insists on Kavya marrying this man of his
And
choosing.
it's also interesting too, because like you, that dynamic, and again, and the actor who plays the dad, by the way, is Ashutosh Rana, like one of the greatest character actors ever. He does this thing in this movie, I mean, through his emotions, through his dialogue, it humanizes not just his character, but every terrible father figure character in Bollywood movies, because he articulates the thing that no one else ever does, that listen, I'm not trying to be a terrible person. When you get hurt, I get hurt. So when I'm trying to do the best for you, I'm trying to protect you and myself because I care about you. And it's like no one's ever articulated that in any Indian movie where the dad, like, shuts down the love affair and beats up the daughter, and it's kind of like, oh, that he's the villain. But in this movie, it's like you can't hate this guy because it's like I get it. Like he's been hurt before. He's trying to protect his other kid. And he's half the time, he's entirely logical in everything he's saying. Like, you can't find fault in any of his irrational demands or his anger.
And even he is op the great thing too, the other great thing about him is that he's open to being proven wrong, which you
Yeah.
never see in the typical Bollywood controlling dad character. In that, so Humpty comes up there, and Kavi's like, just give him a chance, just meet him, dad. He's a good guy.
Well,
You have a lot in common.
I gotta say the best part. So the second half of the movie is more a direct like mirror image of Dilwale, but with various kind of twists and turns that don't happen in Dilwale. Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge, not the crap Rohit Shetty movie from 2 years ago. So the cool thing is when they initially show up, the friends come to the small town village when Kavya goes back, And the coolest part is they come back, and they don't come back as, I'm here to marry your daughter. You know, they come back as, sir, she won a raffle. She won a free sari from one of our raffle giveaways at a store she visited. Yeah. So, like, pure bullshitting and just laying it on thick. And you think, oh, that's what this movie's going to be now. They're going to pretend to get in good with the family, pretend to be these outsiders. Just like, again, Shah Rukh Khan did in Dil Wale Dulhania Le Jayenge, right? And then they're going to win over the family and, oh, I get where this is going. But literally 5 minutes into that scene, it gets shut down because the dad is not stupid. He realizes this is all fake. He realizes it's all BS, and he calls him out on it. They get beat up, sent packing home. And then you're like, oh, shit, what now?
Yeah.
And then he comes back to challenge the dad and essentially says, listen, I'll do whatever it takes. Because,
yeah.
And there's another cool part, too. The character of Varun Dhawan in this movie, Humpty Sharma, even though he's kind of shown as a good-for-nothing, you see his strengths. He might not be a strong businessman, but he understands people. He's manipulative. So when he comes back to challenge the dad, he says, listen, like, I know you did a love marriage. And the dad's like, oh, because my daughter told you. And he's like, no, I know your caste. Like, you are a different caste than your wife.
Yeah.
So clearly this wasn't arranged. You fell in love too. So what's your problem? And it's those small things. Like, when a character's shown as being observant and it's not just something that's written into the story for the setup, you're like, smart. And not just good writer, but you're like, smart character. So just that's something I like too, which kind of, again, and twisted, like, the second half from that point on was completely different because you're like, oh, what is this movie about now?
Yeah, that's a really, really good distinction. And it's the way it winds up proceeding is that the dad goes, okay, fine, I will give you a chance. Here's the deal. You got to shepherd around her betrothed. She's coming from America, and this guy named Angad. And you're going to be taking care of him. And if you can find anything in him over the course of the next 5 days before the wedding starts, you tell me, and I'll call the marriage off. It's fine.
Yeah.
And
if
so,
you can prove to me how you're going to be better for her than this guy,
exactly.
Then objectively, and like he gives it, like he gives him the responsibility, right? That's the cool part too.
Right.
He's like, you're now responsible for my daughter's marriage and her wedding. Like, if you think you're better than this guy, then we'll go with you. But it's on you.
Exactly. And I went back and looked at my review when I initially wrote this, and I'm changing my mind on it, because I initially thought, like, that Alia's character kind of gets sidelined. She's not as integral to, like, you know, she doesn't have a direct role to play in getting together with Humpty, but it's also because she's got a house full of relatives. She's got stuff to do. She's busy. You know, farm this out to Humpty and let him be the one to figure out what's wrong with Angad. So,
well, I still like, though, but there's still elements where she has a say. Like, for example, like the scene with her dad right after they get beat up and packing home. The scene with her dad is amazing because she stands up for herself. Because you're just like, she's going to be in a room now crying until something else happens, right? That's the expectation. But she fully stands up for herself. She's like, he keeps me happy. Like, I love him. He loves me. They have this, you know, loving conversation, not a, you know, shut the hell up, I'll smack your face. Like, he respects her, she respects him, and they have this amazing father-daughter conversation, which, again, you don't see in Bollywood movies, like, majority of the time.
No, it's really great. And so things get even better when Angad shows up from America. Because Angad, who's played by Siddharth Shukla, who I think did more, has done more, like, TV.
He seems like a TV guy. He's really good at, like, turning to the camera and just holding an expression, which is very TV.
Yeah, exactly. He is the perfect casting because the dude looks like Superman. He's perfect. He's got this charming smile and this great hair and these big muscles. And what is it? His Humpty's friend Poplu, when the guy shows up, goes, oh, is this guy a doctor or a model? And later that night, Poplu. They try to get Angad drunk and as being part of the setup plan to foil him. And Poplu's throwing up and Angad walks in and goes, can I help? I'm a doctor. You're like, oh, great. Of course.
And then they try to get him drunk too. And he's like, I don't drink. My body's like a temple. And you're like, ugh. Like, it's thick. Yeah.
He is the ultimate nightmare scenario for Humpty because he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he doesn't
any romantic
swim.
Rival. Like, this guy's perfect
by
all standards.
That he has, like, literally no flaws at all.
Yeah.
And I think one of the funniest bits in it definitely is that they go online and they see his Facebook page and they see him posing with some other men,
Yeah.
and they're like, that's it, he's gay, this is it, we've
Yeah, because
got him.
I think there's like comments about like how he commented on something he said and said like, "Oh, I love you," or something like that.
Yeah,
So, and
exactly.
they take that again literally, being I guess from a conservative. Yeah, I don't, and that's how it is like for us too. Like in South Asian culture, it's like you see some guy saying "I love you" to another guy, and it's like, "Whoa, what?"
Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. So they figured this is it. We're gonna get him. So they're like,
Yeah.
Poplu, you buddy are gonna have to go
Yeah. Yeah.
seduce him, basically.
Yeah.
And there is this awesome shot where Poplu comes in all coy, like with a glass of milk after Angad's been out jogging, and he gets out of the shower. And he's just wearing a towel,
Yeah.
and he's like, "Oh, here's milk to help nourish your body." And Angad's like, "Okay, thanks." And he starts drinking the milk, and then the camera. Like you get this slow pan up and down
Yeah.
Angad's torso, and he's all muscly. And Poplu finds
And
himself,
wet.
yeah, and he's
Yeah.
wet, and it's
Yeah.
like, and Poplu is like, "Oh my God, this guy is sexy." And then
I
he's like, "Wait a minute, but I'm straight, but I'm kind of
Yeah.
falling in
I
love with
love,
Angad too."
yeah. I love
And
that, because basically the whole plot is that they're trying to get the friend to seduce this guy because they suspect he's gay. So if that comes out, then boom, problem solved. You know, he can't marry the girl. But the funny thing is, throughout all that, there's a scene where they're all kind of arguing about, like, you know, no, we should keep going, or no, we should. And the guy who's the friend who's trying to seduce him, he's so. There's this scene where he's like, guys, I don't know if I can keep doing this because I'm getting confused myself. So.
so he's so conflicted, and Angad ends up, or Poplu ends up kind of getting seduced
Yeah.
himself, especially because he's, it's really clever. And of course Angad's not gay, so it's
Yeah.
like the easy solution to their
Yeah.
problems, of course, isn't there, because that's not what this is about. Because meanwhile, every night Humpty has been going to file his reports to Kavya's dad, and they bond while they're smoking. And of course Kavya's
Yes.
dad is like, "Ugh, you smoke. Clearly, this is not good enough.
Yeah.
You're not good enough for my daughter." And Humpty's like, "But I'm smoking with you. You are also smoking. This is what we have in common."
Yeah.
And so that's really how the movie proceeds. Is it that it's about what is? I think Humpty says at one point that people aren't perfect. Relationships are perfect.
Yeah.
And that this really is about, like, it's not a matter. His qualifications. All he really needs to be qualified to be Kavya's husband is to love her and be loyal to her and promise to treat her well, and that he, will take care of her to the best of his ability.
Yeah.
And that as long as she loves him too, that's really all that they need. And so it's, it does end on that happy note where finally her dad realizes that it has nothing to really to do with Angad. It has to do with Humpty, and that Humpty is the
Yeah.
right man for his daughter.
And
And so much so that Angad just disappears at the very end of the movie, by the way, which is the one big flaw with it, where it was just like, where the heck did this guy go? How did we get out of this? How did they explain it to him? Like, sorry,
He'll
wedding's
be
off.
fine, okay?
Well, he will be
Angad
fine.
will be fine,
That's true.
okay?
That's true.
So the one thing, so the one kind of criticism of this movie, like one of the things I heard was that kind of that whole gay sort of like comedic setup. A lot of people had a problem with that, you know, it was kind of being exploited or whatever. But the thing that, and I kind of see moments of that too, but the thing that I kind of like, the way I make my peace with it is in India. And again, and this is from my experiences from Bangladesh. I haven't had, you know, friends or family or in India, but in Bangladesh, it is the sentiments are like that. Like if you're too close with a dude or whatever, like it is, there's no sense of platonic man relationship that's not taken as, huh? Right? Especially, God forbid, it's a white guy, you know, which is what it was in this movie, right? So I understand Varun and his friends' reactions towards that. The cool thing that kind of saves that moment for me is at the end, the American Angad, when he thinks that this guy starting to seduce him is gay, he's like, "Bro, it's okay. Like, I like you too, but I'm not gay. But it's cool if you are. Do you want me to help you tell your friends?" Like, he gets full on like social acceptance mode. He's like, "I'll support you," you know. And that to me was like, okay, you can't accuse this movie of being homophobic or using that as a joke when this guy clearly isn't. And you know, the outcome is pretty on a good note, I thought, anyways.
Right. It's well, and especially when the context for them using this, his supposed gayness is not because it's some character flaw, just on
Right.
its face. It's that it probably should disqualify him from marrying a woman.
Right,
You
exactly.
know, if he's not sexually attracted to her, why are you going to trap her in this loveless marriage?
Yeah.
Or trap both of them in the loveless marriage. So it's just that it's convenient, it's foolproof. And I don't think that it's, you know, I didn't have the sense that this was taken as being
Offensive or
critical
derogatory or
of
right.
homosexuality. You know, it's not homophobic.
Yeah.
It's kind of, and I kind of, you know, you do have that one scene where it's showing sexuality is a continuum, even
Yeah.
for this guy who's like fake trying to seduce
Yeah,
Anga,
and that was
you know.
my takeaway, that I'm like, it can't be homophobic because he's questioning his sexuality. Like, that's a good thing. Like, if he's facing the situation and he's open-minded enough to go, wait, am I? 'Cause damn.
Yeah,
Right.
because he even says, he's like, if she doesn't want to marry him, I'll marry him. He's handsome. He's a great cook. He's super nice. He's perfect. Like, what's wrong with him? So I didn't. I think this is. It's always tricky when
For
any sort
sure.
of gay subplots come up in any Bollywood movie because
Yeah.
they're so often
Oh,
improperly
and they're
handled.
so offend they're so and that's the thing about this one, right? That this one is like so open to interpretation that listen, if some people got upset by this, I get it. You know, if some people weren't, I get that too. But other portrayals of these sort of subplots or comic setups involving homosexuality are so terribly offensive. Like, there's no right or wrong. It's just like, holy crap, how did you put this out? That this one I can kind of let go because I'm like, you know what, this is it's harmless enough. Whereas you see other things and you're just like, wow, that was terrible.
Yeah, I think you can read into it the director's intentions and
Right.
that it's not bad, even if he misses the mark, even if some certain
Right.
things don't work about it or if there's a problem. I think it was a good faith effort, you know, that wasn't born out of any hostility or judgment, so.
Now the ending of the movie, like you mentioned, it does end on a happier note. The coolest thing to me, and again, like, and this is where a lot of my own sort of personal biases come in. The coolest thing about this movie was it ended. It had a really good counterpoint to arranged marriage versus love marriage. That yes, on the surface, it's not always perfect, right? Like arranged marriage, yes, on paper it looks amazing. And then again, she brought this up too, that there was this really cool scene between Kavya's dad and the mom, who again relegated to nothingness until this scene. But she comes up and she's like, you know, Humpty's just like you, right? Like you guys are exactly the same. Like you're kind of the same side, a different side of the same coin, and he's good for her. And how can you guarantee her happiness with this other guy? Because you couldn't guarantee it with your other daughter. Like, are you gonna do something? Like, if she's unhappy, are you gonna give a guarantee? Are you gonna put it on paper and say, I guarantee her happiness? Like, you can't do that. So at the end of the day, you have to let her make her own choice. And that was kind of the that's what I took away from it too. Especially the last scene where he stands up to the dad finally. And he there's this role-playing scene where he goes up to the dad and he's like, listen, I'm gonna talk to you like you're my friend and not like you're her dad. And he fully starts talking to her like, you know, like buddy buddy. And it ends with, you know, I don't understand why the dad's being a, you know, a dick, blah blah blah. And he ends on like a threatening note that of, hey, if anyone ever touches my friends again, like I'm gonna kick their ass or something like that. And that to me was a completely unrelated to the romance subplot, but to the dad shows his loyalty to relationships, which kind of made me go, this was good. Like, he didn't say anything about him and Kavya. He was just like, if anyone touches my friends ever again, I'm gonna kick their ass, right? And that was just kind of like, to me, like, brilliant. But yeah, and again, and the ending is a direct play on Dilwale Dulhania Le Jayenge. The first movie, if you look at it today, you can put under the, you know, progressive feminist microscope and say that at the end, she still needed the dad's permission to live her life, quote unquote. Whereas this movie is more, not about their permission. And in this movie, the girl tries to run away and the guy has to convince her to, you know, we can't do it this way. Because Gavia runs away at one point. He
It's
takes heat.
the parallel, you know, the exact opposite of the ending of DDLJ, where
Yeah.
instead of both of them getting on the train together, he
Yeah.
pulls her off of it
Yeah.
and is like, no, we got to deal with this.
And she's on the train and he's running behind the train and she's trying to give the hand to get him on. So yeah, and he convinces her not to. He's like, and again, and that to me, again, just given what I've seen in my culture and real life stories I've heard about these situations, when you have like running away is never the solution. Eloping is never a solution. Because at the end of the day, and he brings up these points, he's like, it's your family. Like, you can't do it this way. You're not gonna be happy without them. Get the hell off the train. And to me, that's like this perfect blend of, yeah, love, because love marriages in our society are very demonized, right? It's like they don't know what they're doing, they're immature, and they're just, you know, in the throes of passion making a horrible mistake. But then this movie shows that, no, like, it's not about that. Like, you can have two mature people fall in love and decide to have a life together, which has nothing to do with, you know, they're crazy and emo and whatever, whatever. So, for all these reasons, I thought I'm Going to Throw Out was a great movie. Do you remember what you gave this movie, Kathy, when you reviewed it?
I initially gave it 3 out of 4 stars, but I think I liked it more watching it a second time, and I would probably do, like, 3.5.
In comparison.
Yeah. Well, oh God, especially in comparison after having
10 out of 4.
Its successor. Yeah, 10 out of 4. How high can my scale go?
Yeah. Give it everything. Okay, so just before we go into the second film, which is Badi Nanak Dulhania, I do want to mention, because it's something you bring up in your review of Badi Nanak Dulhania, that both these movies are produced by Karan Johar. This is under his banner of Dharma Productions, which is, you know, Aliyah's home. And yeah, so Hamchamak Dulhania, just to wrap up, great movie. And the coolest thing about the movie is when you sum it up, you can really, because of all the things we just discussed, the way you kind of describe Hamchamak Dulhania is that it plays on the usual rom-com tropes, like from the past, from today. And really, it's almost like every plot turn or every plot point is like, you know what, we're going to do the exact opposite of what everyone else has done. And everything, including the climax, is the complete opposite of what every other movie before it has done. Which is why I thought it was good.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that is good to note too, that I think this was Shashank Kaitan, the director's first movie. He wrote and directed it. And you see that this was years in the making, that this was clearly something he had ideas. He really thought everything out. It was really well planned out. And that is, I will say, the big advantage that the first movie by a director or a writer has over that, is that you have years and years to do it. You have your whole life up to that point to come up with every idea you want to get out there. When you make the second movie, you have a year to write it, maybe, and you know, maybe 2 years. That's a lot less time, and you often see that. That's often why second movies are not as good as the first, because you're just in a time crunch and you haven't learned how to quickly do all that and edit things and get the story the way you want.
That's a very good, you know, and I actually hadn't thought of that, because that's a very good idea. That's a very good explanation of, and we'll kind of come back to this at the end of both, but that's a very good explanation of how we go from Hamchamak Dulhania to Badi Nanak, which is a perfect segue. We're going to get into that now. So Badi Nanak Dulhania, I'll take this one.
Sure. Please.
Okay, another warning for all you listeners, rage incoming. Okay.
I'm going to try not to swear, I promise.
Yeah, no,
I can't.
No,
I mean, well, I can't guarantee that I won't.
Yeah, no, it's fine. It's fine. We'll
do my best.
Yeah, no, that's completely fine. So, we'll get into Badi Nanak Dulhania right now. So, essentially, like Kathy mentioned originally, it's the exact same cast. Everybody shows up from the first movie, except the people that matter, which we'll talk about that later. But Varun Dhawan are back, Ali Dabhat's back, the friend, I think his name is Sahil Vaid. Poplu, you know, our wannabe gay seducer, he's back. Even Shontu, the other friend from the first movie, returns in the second half. So the setup for this movie is very similar. You've got Badri, which is Varun Dhawan. He essentially plays a loan shark, like a loan collector for his dad.
Yeah.
They have a money lending business, which right off the bat gives you very shady implications. Like, why does this exist today? But it's shown as very... So the difference between Humpty Sharma and Badi Nanak in the setting is that Humpty Sharma was in the city. It was very sort of an urban sort of landscape, a very modern, contemporary. Whereas Badi Nanak is set in the smaller towns, like almost rural... I don't want to say villages, but let's say one up from a village, like very small town, very sort of rural, conservative sort of mentalities. And so that's how he's able to be a loan shark, because in the city, it's kind of like there's a bank. So him and his buddy, kind of, again, good for nothing. His dad's got a business. The beginning of the movie, between Humpty Sharma and this movie, there's this sort of epilogue, or like this voiceover introduction about kind of setting up the family and the characters. And we get to meet Badri's dad, who's you know, this gruff guy who's heart problems, which suggests that he doesn't really have heart problems. Basically, Badri has an older brother who wasn't a love marriage. And essentially it didn't work out. The dad wasn't happy with it. The brother was ready to move out and, you know, disown the whole family. Right when the brother leaves, the dad conveniently gets a heart attack, and since then has had heart problems. And since then, anytime he's upset or something happens, he's quick to go to that you know, oh, my heart, to get everyone to be like, all right, fine, we'll just do what you want. The brother ended up essentially, you know, not marrying the girl he loved, going with the, you know, the choice that his dad had for him, which happened to be a girl who was, in finance. She graduated. She was set to be a career woman, but she ends up giving it all up to be this household's, you know, elder, you know, bahu, or wife, to the brother. But the father-in-law, Badri's dad, doesn't let her work. She's just a housewife. And every day, the poor brother goes up to the rooftop and has a couple of drinks because he obviously has never gotten over the love of his life that he gave up. And this is just the beginning. This is the voiceover of, here's my family. And then we get to meet Badri, who's, again, a good-for-nothing guy. He ends up meeting the girl at this wedding. And she's, I guess, she talks back to him. Like, he's a little condescending to her. She kind of shuts him up. And obviously, you know, a girl that stands up to the guy has to be, you know, the perfect match for him. So he falls in love and essentially starts stalking her. I don't know what else to say about this. He starts stalking her. There's some weird situations. He essentially, I think he shows up at her college first, right? Before the mm-hmm. Skype call? Yeah.
Yeah.
So he shows up at her college, and it's creepy as hell. She shows up at her college. She's like, what the hell? He basically assumes that he's going to marry her. He doesn't ask her. He doesn't ask to go out with her. He just assumes that, hey, good news, you know? And she's like, the hell are you talking about? Like, get out of here, you creep. And he's, by the way, stunned by this rejection. He's completely baffled. He doesn't get why any girl would reject him, mm-hmm. Because look at him. To the point where he even lies to his buddy. You know, his buddy's like, what happened? And he's like, it's cool. I got it in the bag. Don't worry. And then, so the friend, I guess we should mention, the friend runs a wedding service, like a matchmaking service. He finds, you know, I guess, you know, potential weddies, groom brides for people. This is the service he provides. So he ends up sending a wedding proposal to her house. And this would be the third indirect interaction he's had with the girl.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So she calls him up, or they call him up on Skype, and she basically says, hey, screw the hell off, because what the hell do you think you're doing? This is not cool. Like, what's your problem? Because imagine a guy you meet on the third date, a guy you've met twice. Third time you come home, there's a marriage proposal from this dude.
And I think he at one point says, like, hey, I traveled 4 hours to get here to your college. Like, dude's going 4 hours each way on a bus to stalk this girl.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not like she's just around the corner. This is his job now.
Yeah. Yes, this is his. And the fact that he feels like he's entitled to some sort of reward from it.
Yes.
That, you know, like, this is the effort I'm putting into my love for you, woman. Like, pay it. Listen up. But yeah, so anyways, he fully rejects him. And then essentially, so after this incident, you see her life a little bit. You see that she did have a failed relationship. She was essentially conned by a guy who was in a relationship with her. They wanted to start up a business. She borrowed a bunch of money against her from her dad. And he ended up scamming her, conning her, ran away with the money. And now her dad genuinely developed a heart condition from this trauma. But now she's kind of, her credibility is kind of damaged. And, you know, so she's not into marriage. She's not looking for a relationship. She's focusing on her career. She wants to be, I think a flight attendant is what.
Yes.
Right. And that's her goal. And she's, you see throughout the movie, she's looking at online courses. She's considering that. She's being pressured to get married by her parents, but she's like, I don't want to. Like, I want to get a job. I want to help. I want to contribute to the family. You know, I know we have money problems, and I want to contribute. But then she also has an older sister who, what I said in my review was, they treat her almost like that she's depreciating in value the older she's getting.
Yes.
I like
the way,
like,
you said that. I remember that.
Because was she, I forget the age they say in the movie, but it was really funny because I think they were like, she's 27. Come on.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm like, uh-huh. But yeah, so she's being pressured on both sides, and we get the sense that she's the more mature one, even though she's the younger sister,
mm-hmm.
Because the dad's talking to her about their money problems, and also because of, I guess, she screwed up. So that's kind of where we are, and she's getting pressured. So eventually, at one point, the dad goes, you know, these people that came with the wedding service, you know, to our house, that's kind of seems to be our only hope, because we don't know anyone willing to marry your sister. So she kind of gives in and goes, you know what, let me call up his buddy. And let me at least hook my sister up. Like, so my parents are happy, and at least her life is kind of settled. Because, again, she's kind of going with the social convention. She's like, okay, this is good for me, but I can't do this to my sister if that's not the life she wants. She doesn't want to be a career woman, whatever. So it's cool to see that blend, that like a progressive, modern-thinking girl in India in that setting, being personally pressured, can still sort of identify and relate to someone else who doesn't choose to do that. Like, and this is where I think the term feminist really kind of distinguish itself, because most people think feminists are people who are man-haters, who want the same thing for everyone, and look down on anyone that chooses anything other than what they think is right.
It's
Correct me if I'm wrong, the only woman here.
no, that's like, yeah, that's a lot of the negative stereotypes, and that's what people get afraid of using the term because of that. And it's, and like you said, it's a much broader term that includes a lot of other things. And both, I think at least in the first half of this movie, and definitely in the other movie, like I would say both of Alia's characters are pretty good feminist role models. I mean, they're both very, and they're very well written, and they're generally they're really interesting characters who have, complex moral, outlooks on life, and a kind of flexibility. And like you said, that it's in Badrinath, that she's kind of took it on, Vaidehi has took it on herself basically to solve all of her family's problems. Finding a husband for her sister, finding, getting money for the family so she can pay back her dad and so that her dad will just relax. And feeling responsible for his health in regard to that. So it's, she's a good character.
And so, yeah, so essentially, so with that in mind, she ends up contacting Badri and his buddy and goes, hey, listen, like, I need you to find. No, actually, her plan originally is, listen, you want to get married to me, because you seem like this shallow, typical guy, and you're good looking enough and whatever. Why don't you just marry my sister? And the only thing I'll say to his credit is, like, nah, bro, I love you. Which, again, probably the only good thing you can say about this guy. Because if he was a sleaze, he'd be like, she is taller. So, but yeah, so, but Badri
Oh,
refuses.
the great thing about it too is that then his friend is like, I'll marry your sister, and they're like, no, sorry, no.
Which is terrible. Like, why
I know.
not? He has a business. He
It's so
has his
basic.
own business, right? Which,
Exactly.
and the thing is, they never address that too. Is it because he doesn't look, isn't conventionally good looking enough? Like, what's wrong with this kid?
I mean, that's the only thing that you would assume, right?
He's a
It's kind
side
of,
character. He's a sidekick, so clearly he's
yeah,
not
it's
good
kind of,
enough.
so it's.
Yeah. Which, and it's awkward too with that subplot, but we'll talk about that here. But yeah, so Vedahi goes to Varun's character Badri and goes, can you marry my sister? Like, obviously you have good pedigree, your family is pretty good, you have money, blah blah blah. And he's like, no, I want to marry you, right? But I will help you find a groom for your sister. And so she sees this coming. She sees his kind of about turn coming, and she's like, hold up. You realize you doing this in no way obligates me to doing anything with you, right? Like, nothing will come of this between you and me. And his reaction to that is, there's a line, and it's in this song too. The line is that, I hope you don't have expectations from this. And he says something like, hope is what my love is built on, or something similar to that. And he smirks and walks away, and she smirks too. But her smirk isn't kind of like a, oh, cute. It's kind of like a, yeah, I don't know about this. So the rest. So now, in Badrinath, this is the adventure, right? So in Humpty Sharma, the adventure was getting revenge for the guy that screws over her friend. In this movie, this is the adventure. This is the adventure that's supposed to kind of bring them together and kind of have them meet each other enough times to fall in love. Like, on this wacky, crazy, stupid adventure of trying to find a groom for her sister. It's not. Did you like that? Like, I don't think it was as good as the other subplot in the first movie.
No, not at all.
It
It
was.
was really dull, and it was, they test a lot of guys, potential grooms, and they're no good and all that. I mean, who cares? And it's, and especially because the sister is really, there's nothing to her. I don't know anything about her other than that she's forlorn, that she's not married at age 27. It's like that's her only character trait. So it's kind of, yeah, that kind of ruins it. But yeah, so the adventure, the whole time you're like, there's nothing really that's going to bring them together. And that even when it succeeds, you're like, okay,
Why?
thanks. Yeah, great.
And okay, and again, so like I said, when I said about Humpty Sharma that it really does a lot to show the progressive nature of love marriage versus arranged marriage. I thought these scenes of audition, of holding a public audition for a guy, Like, the further they went on with that subplot, the more I felt it was demeaning to the sister. Because I'm like, really? Like, is this the only avenue to her to pursue, like, a potential groom? Like she has to literally put an ad out and just audition any random guy that comes, shows up at this place to be her husband? Like, this
Well,
is so demeaning.
and that it's not even her auditioning them. It's not like, I'm going to meet these guys for coffee and then I'll introduce them to you later and you decide. It's like, no, I need a panel of experts to help me pick this out because I can't handle this on my own. It's.
Right. One of whom, by the way, wants to marry her. And that's like this
Yeah.
running gag about how the friend with the wedding business is the one that wants to marry her. And I'm just kind of like, this is so, like, I feel so bad for this girl. Like, she's sitting at a table, like American Idol style, auditioning losers to be her husband. And one guy on the other end keeps creeping on her, going, "Hey, baby, don't worry, you'll marry to me. Like, you'll get married." Like, and he says this too at one point. He's like, "You'll get married to me, don't worry, I'll write it out. I'll give it to you in writing that you'll end up marrying me." And I'm like, this is so weird for her, like, to be experiencing this. But anyway, so at the end of it, happy ending. They end up getting finding a groom. Now, there's this other small sort of subplot involving dowry, which isn't explored properly at all. And even the way they do it is terrible, because essentially the guy they get for the girl, for her, for Alia Bhatt's sister, his dad wants dowry, which right away subjugates and kind of subjugates the dad, Alia Bhatt's parents. And they have this whole argument about the fact that no, she's not gonna get married to anyone that wants a dowry, blah blah blah. And here's the cool part. So Badri steps in and goes, "I'll take care. I'll handle it. I got this." Like, I'll be the savior. But the way he's the savior is going, "Hey bro, can you bring it down a little bit, that amount? Like, can you haggle a little bit? Like, can you give us like a discount? I mean, she's pretty, right? Like, can you bring?" And I'm like, "What the hell? How is this like a good guy tactic?" Like, and again, the thing is, I would have these are the moments where I would have totally taken like a full on Shah Rukh Khan style monologue. Or shot like Suraj Bhardwaj style Salman Khan monologue of girls are our respect and the backbone of this country. You shouldn't be paying debt. I would have fully accepted a monologue like that if it ended up with the dude going, "You're right, son. I'm so sorry. Please forgive me." No, but his approach is, "Listen, bro, can you hook us up?" And it's just like, what the hell? To the point now. So this also brought up this other interesting issue for Badri getting married to Alia Bhatt's character, because now he's like, oh shit, she's not gonna like dowry from, that my dad's definitely gonna ask her dad. So now what do I do? So the plan they come up with his brother and his sister-in-law, who remember was the business graduate who's not allowed to work, she comes up with the fact that, hey, listen, we'll just take money out from our own business, give it to Badri to give to her Alia Bhatt's dad. So it's really our money that we're buying her with, quote unquote. By the way, folks, that's what dowry is. You're buying the girl. Sorry, actually, you're buying a groom, which is even weirder. Right. Oh God, it's so confusing and terrible. But yeah, so that's what the plan they come up with, that she'll never know. So you take our money from our business, give it to her dad to give back to our dad, and she won't know. She'll think there's no dowry and everything's happy dappy. Now, here's the part that gets really weird in this love story. And by the way, this is all the first half of the movie. All these things are the first half of the movie. So he ends up finding, he finalizes all this, he resolves the dowry situation, and he comes back to her. And legitimately, this is the line that he says to her when he's about to announce the fact that, hey, I set up your sister's wedding with this guy. And he says that, "I've got good news and I've got a proposal." Like, or an offer is what he says to her. And she's like, "What? What do you mean?" And the first thing he says, "Well, the good news is that I've figured it all out. Everything's good. They're good to go. Your sister's good to go. Her marriage is set. The offer is now you and me." And her react, and you can tell from her face, and then she's like, "Okay." And he's like, "Well, think about it. Like, we're all good to go now." And then he rides off, and she is smiling, but her expression is more of like, sort of a curious, sort of like, "Oh, that's funny," or, "Oh, that's weird." Like, but she's still, it's not like she's offended by it. It's more of like she's curious. The next scene is her talking to her sister. She's got, and here's the setup of this scene. She's sitting in front of a computer. She's looking at flight attendant courses. She's, got all these things that she has plans to do in her life and in career. And she's talking to her sister. She's like, "Hey, I don't know if I want to get married to this guy." And the only time in this movie she reveals any sort of feelings towards Badri other than some guy I know is she says he's a nice enough guy, but I don't know if I want to marry him. I don't know. I got all these plans. I want to do all these things. And then her sister, the only time the sister has any contributing factor to this story, is basically tells her to listen, you know, because I think she asks the sister, like, aren't you settling? Like, aren't you just marrying and just... And the sister has a very... And again, there's nothing wrong with what the sister said. The sister says, listen, I'm just dealing with what's in front of me right now. I don't know what's going to come. I'm just taking what's happening in the now, you know? So the advice that she gives her that Alia Bhatt's character interprets as is, you don't know what's going to happen in the future. This is a good thing that's happening to you right now. Take it, because you don't know if the thing in the future is going to be worth it or not, if you reject this thing. So essentially saying, hey, settle.
Keep in mind, though, that we have heard explicitly that, like, very clearly, that the sister and the guy she's marrying really like each other.
Right, yeah,
this
is not
totally
a forced
into
marriage.
Each other. It's nothing like Vaidehi and Buddy.
No, not at all. Yeah, they've met. Yeah, I mean, I'm skipping through scenes, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, they've met, the sister met. The guy's a really cool guy. He's funny. Like, they have this sweet moment together, and he's a good guy for her. No question.
And they're optimistic about their marriage. Right. As opposed to Vaidehi, who does not want to get married.
No, she has doubts, and the thing is, and here's the thing, right, that we're talking about. Like, this isn't about, oh, I don't want to get married to him, or, you know, I don't like him. She doesn't want to get married in general, because she wants to pursue her career, which isn't the craziest thing in the world.
No.
Because if the sister's 26 or 27, and she's the younger sister, she's got to be, like, 23?
Yeah, she's just graduating college right now.
Right.
So she had just graduated, and this was like the next step.
Well, I'm saying the typical Hindi movie, you know, age role is like 22, 23 usually.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so and now here's the part that kind of leads us in the second act, which is just, this is where I'm totally heartbroken by this movie. They have this conversation. The next scene is she's agreeing to marry Badri.
Mm-hmm.
And the sister's getting married, and everyone's happy. Now we come with the typical Humpty Sharma Ki Dulhania style happy wedding house family situation. Mm-hmm. And the whole time you're like, this feels so terribly wrong, because she doesn't like this guy. She doesn't even want to get married. This seems such a exploitative situation of, you know, hey, I'm hooking up your sister, so you better marry me too. And it just feels wrong. And I'm glad to say that feeling of wrongness does not go away until the end of the movie, starting from this point on. Anyways, next up, we have a happy love song where they seem to be getting along. And again, you can see in the song that there's no outwardly explicit gestures of a relationship there. They're just having fun. You know, near the end of the song, she's hugging him. She's, you know, kind of like kissing him on the cheek and stuff. But they're not...
This is not sexy romantic.
It's not at all. Yeah. And I mean, you can take a look at the song, and if this song was in the beginning of the movie, if you didn't watch the movie, you could say this is the song that where they fall in love, or this is their song where they hook up in a relationship. Right. This is not the song post agreeing to marry someone.
Right.
But anyways, so now the best part of this movie is right before the interval, right before the second half, we get a very Hollywood-like plot twist, which I loved. I absolutely loved it. I saw it coming from a mile away. Mm-hmm. Essentially, we have a wedding altar. Badri's there. The sister's groom is there. Double wedding because, you know, save money, I guess. and very Hollywood style, Alia Bhatt's character does not show up at the altar, leaves Badri at the altar, goes off to follow her career and her dreams and her goals and her passions. And I was literally like, yes, this is the end of the movie, right? Because this is the perfect ending to this movie.
Right.
But no. So basically she goes off to Singapore. She got an opportunity the academy, flight training academy. So she goes off to study to become a flight attendant in Singapore, which is like a once in a lifetime opportunity. She leaves him at the altar, and the best part is pre-interval, you see his face, and everyone's upset, and Badri's very emotional, like he's just about to like be in tears. And I'm looking at this and I'm like, are we supposed to be sympathetic? I'm not sure how this is being played.
It's a really good question. I mean, it even goes to like the titles of the movies. You know, like in some ways, like you kind of think, oh, well, it's, you know, it's Badrinath Ki Dulhania. It's about Badrinath's wife. She's the main character. No, No, she's not. Her name isn't in the title. It's about him, which then makes it that much more weird that we're supposed to be rooting for him, and but we're like, she's following her own dreams. And he's being way too entitled, and he's not reading any of the signals anyway that she's not interested. And yet somehow we're supposed to be able to feel bad for this guy. And it, like you said, it just feels wrong. And the feeling of wrongness just
Oh, it gets.
keeps getting
I
wronger.
mean, everything up until this point. So, I mean, there's a lot of humor in this movie. Everything up until this point is open for interpretation. Like, there can be arguments made for, like, when I'm saying I don't think she really liked him, I don't think there was any chemistry, you can make a complete case for the entire opposite thing, that no, she wouldn't have put up with him if she didn't want. She was leading him on. It's all up for interpretation up until this point. The second half, not so much. So the fallout from her leaving in Badri's family is what a B, this C word, da 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 da. His dad is livid, and not livid in the typical sense in like a Suraj Bhattacharya or like Kabhi Khushi Kabhie Gham style movie where it's like I will disown her and but no, his dad wants him to go find this girl so they can kill her as an example to anyone else who screws with his family.
Yes, that is exactly what is said. He is not, it is not hyperbole.
No.
It is not a metaphor.
No.
No, he literally wants his
Yes.
son to bring her back to town, string her up in the town
Right.
square so that everybody can see, like, don't get any ideas about running
Right.
away, girls.
Stringing up, by the way, is not a term for affectionate bracelet making. It's for
No.
hanging. It's basically what a lynching is. And again, I know I'm prone to exaggeration. Watch the movie. This is the dialogue that I've paraphrased here. And here's the crazy part. Badri, who is also so livid that his honor has been besmirched, goes along with it. And this isn't going along like, oh, she's in the city next door. I'm just gonna go, I'll look on her Facebook, I'll ask her family. She's in a different country. So the thing that to me was really crazy is, yeah, you can be pissed off, you can be upset, you can be mad. I mean, again, and I'm not trying to trivialize anyone getting left at the altar, guy or girl. Like, it's gotta be an embarrassing, humiliating thing. And I understand you're mad and stuff like that. And I'm sure a lot of people want to kill the other person out of that anger. But here's to me the creepy part. He goes to get a visa, tracks down that she's in Singapore, goes to get a visa, which takes a bit of time too. This is like a couple of weeks long process in India, or at least a week or two. And throughout this delay, he's adamant on the fact that I'm gonna go find her, hunt her down, kill her. Sorry, bring her back, then kill her. So at no point does his anger dissipate or logic comes through at all, like in anyone who's in an angry, hurt situation. So he follows up with this, finds her in India, and here's the messed up part. Here's the reunion of these two characters post, the pre-interval situation. He legit kidnaps her, grabs her in
This
the
is in
middle of the
Singapore,
night.
by the way.
This is in Singapore, yeah. So I mean, I'm assuming, I think, do they say how much time has passed? I don't remember.
It's been at least, I think, like a month, because she's into her training
Yeah,
program
she's full in
now.
her training. Her dad's mad at her. Everything's kind of, it's all the aftermath is kind of all kind of settled down a little bit.
Yeah, and her sister has already like moved to London or
Yeah, and
something
she's
like that. So
married
this
and
is
yeah.
yeah, so this has taken this has been a couple of
Weeks, let's say.
at least weeks, if not months.
Yeah.
So this
So
has been brewing.
yeah. So he doesn't know he's, she's moved on with her life. Excuse me. So one night she's coming home from her training. We get to see her life and it's like, "Oh, wow, cool. She's doing her thing." And literally, Badri shows up out of nowhere, middle of the night. She's walking into her apartment. This is the scariest thing I've ever seen in a Bollywood rom-com. He literally grabs her from the back, covers her mouth, throws her into the trunk. They drive, him and his buddy, because of course the buddy's there too, because you need an accomplice. The buddy, they're driving down the highway. She's in the trunk, losing her mind, and he pulls over on like the secluded highway, and basically lets her out. What happens next is one of the most disturbing things I've ever seen in any Bollywood movie ever. He proceeds to be so butthurt that he's essentially accusing her of leaving with the altar. Fair enough. Here's the messed up part. Aaliyah, after being kidnapped, shoved into the back of a trunk, and driven God knows where, is apologetic to him for leaving him at the altar. Forget the things that just happened right now. She's saying sorry to him while he continues to berate her for how dare you do this to me, how dare you, blah, 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 blah. And there's a moment where she's like, I'm not gonna, I'm not going to you know, like blah blah blah, how could you do this to me, etc., etc. And her thing is, she's like, if you didn't love me, why didn't you just tell me if you didn't want to get married to me? And she says, I did, like a gazillion times. Yeah. And his response is, you should have told me one. Why can't you tell me one more time? And I'm like, really? Like, yeah. This is what we're going to say. We're going to say no means no, but you have to convince me of it. Otherwise, yeah, exactly. I don't believe you.
Yeah, I didn't believe you the first dozen times that you told me. It takes that 13th time. That's when I'll actually listen to you. And keep in mind, too, the weird thing about it is that the way she's written, and this is where the writing of the character gets totally bonkers, is that this isn't like her, like, begging for her life. Like, I'm sorry, I'll do whatever. It's no. The, oh, I'm legitimately sorry. I'm so sorry I hurt you. Meanwhile, the scene doesn't end until he has his hand on her throat and the cops show up and stop him.
Yeah.
So it is, like, worth reiterating that he has tracked her down to a foreign country, even though she's never contacted him. He's used off every resource he has to figure out where she is, tracked her down to a foreign country, kidnapped her, specifically taken her away from anybody who can help her to an isolated place. He has a friend with him, so there's two of them, two men who are clearly capable of physically overpowering this one woman, and then argues with her, hand on the throat, thankfully the police show up. Like, this is the point where there is no going back. This is, the line has been crossed.
Yeah.
You are not the good guy hero of the rom-com anymore. Because if you had anybody do that to your sister, your friend, then and said, well, I'm still thinking about marrying him, you would say, no, you're crazy. No, don't do that. He's dangerous. And so why we're expected to then, like, go along with this for the rest of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, I would be happier if the movie just ended with him in jail.
Yeah.
She becomes a flight attendant and that's it.
Right.
But of course that's not what happens, because the whole premise of the franchise is that, oh, you liked Varun and Alia so much together the first time, you'll be so happy to watch them a second time and you'll can't wait to root for them to get together. How will they finally wind up in love at the end?
Yeah, and how we get there is just as troubling and disturbing, because and to me also another kind of, and I don't know if this is a tone deaf thing or it just at this point though, it just feels the terrible things we see happen in this movie is almost intentional, because following the cop show up scene, they are not arrested, I guess they're taken to the police station,
mm-hmm.
and Alia Bhatt's character does something which to me kind of is, again, it's just sad at this point, like mm-hmm. a dude you don't know well enough, you agreed to marry out of obligation, who has now tracked you down to a different country in the middle of the night, threw you in the back of a car and tried to choke you out on the street. And when the cop asks her, hey, what the hell, is everything okay? Here's what our police officer saw you guys doing. What's going on? She does the thing that, you know, all women are never told to do in an abusive relationship, is she protects him. She says, no, just a misunderstanding, blah, 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 blah. And while, by the way, he's sitting there looking exactly like a wife beater.
Yeah, exactly.
His eyes are like bloodshot. He looks super pissed off. You know, and there's like no way in my mind. Like, if I was a cop, I'd be like, you need to go into the drunk tech and cool off, because you look like you're going to kill me right now. Like, and it's just crazy how you can kind of do this kind of stuff. And then, and because right after the police station, there's this song, like a sad song, which I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be. What are the filmmakers trying to make me feel with the song?
Yeah.
Like, who am I being sad for? Because for her, I'm mad for her. Like, on behalf of her, I'm mad at him. Like, who are we supposed to feel sorry for in this scenario?
Like, I can almost understand at this point where she's just like, listen, I just don't even want the hassle of the cops. I just want this guy to go away.
Yeah.
But of course, that's not, you know, but like you said, the smarter option definitely is to be like, take him away, get him, you know, kicked out. So, and we find out that definitely that would have been the smarter option, because
he does it again.
He comes back, he beats up some guy he thinks is with her, even though he's dating her roommate.
Yeah.
And so, and it happens to be the guy who plays Shantu in the first movie. So he beats up a guy and I think one of like the guards at their apartment building. So he gets arrested again and they have to wait like 3 days. The guy he beats up bails him out and they have to wait 3 days for their visa stuff to get like sorted
his,
out
yeah,
or
his
something. Yeah,
passport
like
gets revoked, and there's a court hearing, basically.
Right.
And
so
they
they
come
have
out
to.
on bail.
And so while they're on bail,
this
that's
is
when
the
Vi-
premise for the love story, by the way.
this is
This is great.
And this is where it is as problematic as it can possibly be. It's Vaide. He says, "You can stay at our apartment with me and my roommate.
Promise to not choke me out in my sleep,
Promise to."
though.
Yeah, exactly.
She doesn't
This
say
is
this, guys.
no. This is where, like, which it leads me to believe. I'm guessing. I haven't read any interviews with the director that he didn't bother to talk to anyone who had been stalked before
Right.
when he wrote this, because
Or
that's.
abused, clearly.
Or abused, yeah. Stalked, abused, anything. Like, that he didn't bother to ask women, like, what would you do in that situation? Because I guarantee you she would not let him live. That's when you're like, oh, you did it again?
Yeah.
I mean, this is, and here's, the thing that's so ridiculous is that I know how bad it is in America. I can only imagine how bad the situation is in India. Like, police do not want to help women who are stalked. They just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that they will tell you, well, you know, you have to wait until he actually
does
physically
something.
Attacks you.
He did.
And it's, and yeah, and of course he did. And so you have the police who are willing to be involved and intercede on your behalf. And she's like, no, no, no. And it's no.
Yeah.
No, it's I refuse. I refuse to believe that this, I mean, I just know this is not how someone would act in that situation. You stop giving them the benefit of the doubt because it's for your own personal safety, especially somebody, like you said, it's not like this is a marriage. It's not like she's already married, like she's got kids to protect or anything like that.
And keep in mind, and this isn't even like, oh, this is a childhood friend or this is my parents, you know, a family friend. So there's other obligations or other concerns involved. This is some guy you met and who stalked you.
Yeah, I met him a few months ago. I never have to see him again if I don't want to, because
exactly.
A, I'm in Singapore right now. We don't even live in the same town back in India.
Exactly.
So it's just, it's so insensitive and tone deaf and stupid, and it makes me so mad.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Now, I mean, it's pointless to kind of go through the details of what happens now, because it just keeps snowballing into bigger issues. But ultimately, they're falling in love happens during this time that he's basically forced to stay at her house because he doesn't have a passport. And basically, him not doing the terrible things he's done up until this point is what makes her reconsider his personality, which makes absolutely no sense, because it's like, wait a minute, the true measure of this guy's personality isn't the fact that his passport's taken away, he can't leave the country because he almost got arrested. Therefore, this must be how he really is.
Yeah.
While he's sitting at my house, hanging around, doing nothing, can't work a microwave, can't cook for himself, can't do anything with anyone because he doesn't know anyone.
Yeah.
Oh my God, love.
Yeah. How would that be appealing to her at all? Like, because it's, the bar has been set so low for him. And this is like a really big problem for this movie versus Humpty.
Yeah.
Like, thinking about the way that the dad character is in Humpty, that he's not a sexist. He just feels really bad that he's let his daughter down. And whereas, you know, Badri's dad, total sexist, old school misogynist, women, you know, no woman in my house is going to work outside of the home and have a job. You know, I want her to come in with a college degree, but then she can't use it because that's not what women do. Women take care of the house. So like, that's where he's coming from. And that's the environment that Badri has grown up in. And so it is we're supposed to be considering it this huge success that he can feed himself while she's out of the house.
Guys, he's not getting in a drunken fight with someone.
Yeah,
like,
congrats.
That's applause.
Kudos.
Right there. Yeah.
I'm just going to guess. I know for my husband, and I know I'm going to guess that you will not die of starvation if your wife is not home for 10 hours.
No.
I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the quality of what I'm eating is going to vary for sure. But no, food will be consumed.
Like, this, like, bare minimum. And it just, it makes me so mad that you just think of how many people, like, I don't know, that there's so much more you can do, and how many people I know, like, even if you're assuming that, yes, he's from some small town, he's got all this, like, that's not good enough. It's not good enough for him to have this realization, like, wow, she should be allowed to work. She really enjoys it.
Well, the thing is, the only time he's impressed at her doing her own job is when he finds out how much she makes.
Oh yeah,
which to me is just a whole other topic conversation itself. But what I find too is crazy, is the fact that like throughout this interaction, like the bar is super low, but it's never about like you brought up a good point about the fact that he's like this because of his upbringing. But they don't explore that. Like, that's a really good topic. Like for example, I brought this up in Sultan when I watched Sultan and did the movie for Sultan, that, you know, the character of Sultan is terribly sexist. He's terribly misogynistic towards his own wife. But the thing is, you look at the context, like he's from a village where he has no sort of exposure to anything other than that. So, I mean, and the thing is, and he's not doing it in a mean-spirited, malicious way. He's just kind of very like, you know, and I feel like Dangal, I haven't seen Dangal, but from the trailers, I feel like Dangal has had a similar sort of depiction as well, that it's not really like, it's not the character's fault that they feel this way about women, it's just what they've been taught. And they try throughout the course of the movie or whatever to try to kind of change that way of thinking.
Right.
So that's a kind of character kind of development thing to kind of go into more. Like, I would have loved to see this movie develop that hey, this is about his dad and what his dad's taught him and how he has to constantly struggle to get over it, you know, and kind of redeem himself from that way of thinking. But this movie's not about that. This movie's all about, here's all the things the girl did wrong, and here's how all the things that the girl guy can keep doing and be forgiven for, no matter how objectively, criminally terrible those things might be. And the thing is, the whole time, too, like, Aliyah Bhatt's character is portrayed as the one who should reconsider. Like the onus is, everything is on her. You know, she's the one that left him at the altar. She's the one that hurt his feelings. Mm-hmm. She's the one that is not marrying him. He's doing all these things for her. He's getting arrested. He's getting drunk, getting into fights. And it's kind of like, it's like you take victim shaming to like a whole nother level. That you're not even shaming a victim. You're just blaming the girl for anything a guy does.
Yeah.
Good, bad, otherwise, mediocre. Yeah.
She's totally responsible for turning him into a decent human being.
Right, exactly.
Like, and it's totally against his will, by the way. Like, he doesn't want to, and it's only, like, the being there that makes him realize, like,
like, when you look at this last scene, the last half, how they fall in love by him just hanging around his house, I'm thinking, in my head, I'm like, is this what their life is going to be post-marriage? Because think about it. He's not going to work. He's going to be staying at home, calling her on how to work out an oven, while she's the career woman waiting to come back to her husband who's sitting on the couch watching TV with a beer belly. Like, this is, really, that last part of the movie was a snapshot into their life together, their wedding life together.
Like, what happens if they want to have kids, you know? He's not going to be taking care of the kids. Like, it's not, you know, this is a totally different movie. I don't know if you agree with me on this. This is a different movie if Bhadri comes to that realization that about, you know, if he undergoes his moral development by the end of the first half.
Yeah.
And if the second half is about how do we win over my sexist father and realize, you know, that her working is a very good thing. And
which would have been more in line with the first movie. Like, if you want to talk about a remake and you're going to do the same cast and a similar love story, why not focus on that? Especially because, and this is the thing that didn't make sense to me, you cast the obstacle in the first movie and you cast him as Ashutosh Rana, as the father. This dad in this movie, who's supposedly obstacle, has no direct influence on anything that happens in the story. It's just all indirect. He's in the background. He's kind of pulling the strings. Mm-hmm. The actor himself gets no scenes other than to kind of, you know, huff and puff and, like, you know, be mean. Whereas it's like, why didn't Ashutosh Rana come back? Why didn't you give him that role and give him a bit more story and have him overcome his sexist, misogynistic nature? You know, It didn't make sense for a remake. Like, if you just followed the plotline of the first movie, this would have been a much better movie.
Yeah. Well, and even something like Kabhi Khushi Kabhi Gham. Like, why isn't the second half like Bhadri saying, Dad, I can't deal with your outdated, you know, way of thinking.
Yeah.
Vaidehi and I are just going to go live our lives and maybe you'll come around someday. Yeah. You know, then it's a different story, because then it is really about growth and not this, like, slow slog, you know, descent into violence and then coming up to like a base level of realizing women are also human. You know, like, it's not,
she should work because you know how much money she makes. A lot. Guys, seriously, a lot.
Seriously, a lot.
Like, because that was his only takeaway. Even when he's with his buddy at the beach, they're chilling and drinking, and he's like, yo, you know how much she makes, bro? I'm like, that's your takeaway?
Yeah.
Like, this girl's been trying to tell you she doesn't want to get married because she wants to pursue her own career, but that's your takeaway after months and months and months. Like, shit, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Okay. I think that's enough for this. So yeah, so I mean ultimately for whatever reason, same maker, same writer director. And I want to come back to what you were saying about the fact that Humpty Sharma was his first movie, so it must have been in development for years and years and years, at least in the director and writer's own mind. Badrinath, and I think we can directly say, I mean, the fact that this movie was fast-tracked because Badrinath was such, sorry, Humpty Sharma was such a huge success. So then you have this writer director who spent years with the first movie, which was really good, have to now rush into the second movie. And again, maybe he hasn't learned to do that yet. Like Karan Johar can sit down 6 months, bang out a wicked script, and be done with it, go into production within the year. First-time director, first-time writer, maybe not so. And this is a clear sort of example of that. I know a lot of people that have watched this movie and they've liked certain aspects of Badrinath. And the thing is, I've seen the movie with my sister, who's been born and raised here, and my wife, who again has mentalities of both cultures and, you know, Western and you know, our, you know, South Asian culture. And there's been varying degrees of upsetness or even like. So I understand. And there's a lot of other people I respect that have liked this movie. I get why, because there's things that you and I get offended about in movies, which are otherwise seen as harmless, just because they're not digging as hard. And again, and you could make the case for us saying that, well, you guys are reading too much into it, which, and I completely accept that as well, that yeah, you're 100% right. Maybe we're just seeing too much of something that isn't there. But again, there's things in this movie which are just explicit, like, you know, thrown into the back of the car, middle of the night, choked in the street. How can you defend that to me in any circumstance whatsoever?
And
Like,
it's you know, it's an important distinction to make too, that one of the you and I both review movies, and it's not us. It's not that we're saying, you know, yes, you should like this, you shouldn't like this. Anybody's free to like whatever they want. What I want is an acknowledgement that I like this, but it's problematic.
For sure.
And that's what I think has been missing. And
Well, yeah,
'cause
there's
that's
so
the
many
thing,
movies
like,
that we like that are severely problematic.
oh, absolutely. And that's the thing is I would like to hear more and see more online about people saying, you know, yes, this is really that's a problematic scene where he, you know, the
Does that,
kidnapping,
yeah.
but you know, other than that, I thought it was cute. And that's, you know, just something to keep in mind that you can,
For sure.
it is not us attacking somebody for liking this
No,
movie. It's
exactly.
just saying, please acknowledge the parts that we have a real problem with.
Right, and even that, and it's like, and the thing is that no one's saying that movies have to be like, a lot of criticism that I've heard is that why can't a movie just be a movie without you relating it to real life situations? And the thing is, like, my viewpoint on certain things have changed because the thing is, I have two little girls. I don't want them to see a movie like this and think this is the norm, or this is what is expected of a girl, or this is what happens in love marriages or a normal South Asian society household or any household really. So that's my, and I get that that's exclusive to me and my own personal bias and you know prejudices. I'm not saying anyone else has to agree with that, but it's just that there's certain things in this movie that you can't defend,
And it's not
and
just
acknowledging it doesn't mean you have to admit that the movie's bad. It's just
right.
acknowledging the fact that hey, yeah, this will. You know, hey, Batman v Superman. I've done that a lot. I still like the movie.
Yeah, and this is not the case of us living in North America. This is, you know, I've seen the same criticism about the movie from critics in India. This is not us saying like, oh, well, this isn't the way it happens in Canada. It's like, no, there are plenty of Indian critics who have a big problem with this movie. So
All
we
right,
can
so
all do better.
I think we can calm down now and kind of like let the rage subside.
Yes.
Okay, perfect. Well, thank you, Kathy, so much for coming back. This was awesome.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, for sure. And you'll be back more often, so we want to reduce the amount of tears that, you know, by the phone. hold it back,
Crying
hold
as
it
much
back.
as Humpty Sharma.
All right, perfect. So thank you so much for everyone else for listening to this episode of the Spiskin Podcast. Kathy, why don't you let everyone know where they can get a hold of you and your musings?
Can find me at accessbollywood.com, and I am on Twitter at Kathy F. Gibson.
Perfect. And you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. You can also visit my website at blankpagebeatdown.com for my review of Badrinath, as well as follow my the show's Twitter on Twitter, spitscreen underscore pod. Follow me personally on Twitter at the Shah Shahid. It's been a while, Kathy, okay, that I've had to do this live, okay? This is usually pre-recorded. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/blankpagebeatdown. Feel free to leave me a review and rating on iTunes if you like the show. Let me know what things I can improve on. I'm always open to feedback and criticism. And if I'm not, I'll just, you know, yell back at you. So that's basically everything. Again, once again, this was episode 28 of the Spiskin Podcast featuring the Dulhania franchise. Thank you so much for listening.